What's the very first step that I take as an agency owner looking to expand through M&A?
Step one, and in many ways, it's very similar to the way I think about it, is that you were buying a home, is you got to look at yourself. And what are your current financials? Are your tax returns prepared and filed? What is the current status of your bank accounts? If you filed your taxes, compiling all this information together so that it's readily available for you.
What does it take to get the 95% financing level?
So the deal looks like a larger agency buying a smaller, very digestible piece. Common system. So if they're on the same AMS platform, that's key. If they're both home and auto with similar carriers, things of that nature that essentially de-risk the solution.
Welcome to the Insurance Dream Podcast. I am your host, Abe Bowling. Thanks so much for joining us today. Talking today to people who want to grow their agencies through merger and acquisition. So buying insurance agencies that are currently out there for sale, or finding agencies and acquiring them. We are talking with Peter Friedman with Agile Cap today. Peter specializes in the merger and acquisition space from the buyer perspective. So he helps arrange financing, get the deals to go through, get all the paperwork in line, and push through the finalized funding. Don, how you doing today?
I am great. How about you, Abe?
I'm doing well. I was out last week. That's why we didn't have a podcast. We went up to Yosemite National Park, and we've got a pretty exciting announcement to make too. Insurance Professionals, the Insurance Professional Aggregator Group, they're going to be giving away a trip to Yosemite for July 4th weekend. So if you're not already an agent with Insurance Professionals, head on over to becomeaninsurancepro.com. And you can sign up there to become an insurance professional, write some policies, get entered to win. They'll base the winner off production, but basically they're going to be giving away a yurt up in the RV park that we stayed at that is close to the entrance to Yosemite, a couple towns away. We had a good time. It's a beautiful place. Rolling hillsides, awesome rocks coming out of the ground all over the place, trees, so pretty. And like I said, it's right there. It's in Coarse Gold, California, which is like a little itty-bitty town, outskirts of Yosemite. Really cool little town. Not that much to it, but then they got Oakhurst is another little town right next door to Coarse Gold. And Oakhurst just kind of backs up right to the entrance of Yosemite National Park, which is a cool place. They got waterfalls starting to flow a little bit more as the snow caps melt. When we were there, we were able to see, we went in for the first day, and there was snow, quite a bit of snow all over the entrance and, you know, going down the roads and stuff like that. And then the last day we were there, there was barely any snow. So luckily, we stopped the car, let the kids get out, play in the snow for a few minutes. Probably should have brought some gloves and boots, but, you know, we didn't know that there was going to be snow. But it was really, really cool. Have you ever been to Yosemite, Don?
I have not, but it is on our bucket list.
Yeah, you should go. You should go. It's neat. I mean, they've got just the amount of waterfalls in the place to me was just absolutely incredible. Waterfalls, rivers, mountains, valleys, all of it. It is.
Sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. And so, yeah, Insurance Professionals giving away that trip to Yosemite, to Coarse Gold, California at the Yosemite RV Resort. Staying in a yurt over 4th of July weekend. They've got it all reserved. So it'll be based on production that happens in April. And yeah, we'll see who writes the most amount of business. Maybe we can have them on the show. See how they did it. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, that would be. What a great way to decompress before that summer rush.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you can take the whole family, you know, the yurts that they've got up there. They've got heating, they've got air conditioning. They're nice. And so yeah, you can go out and rough it in the wilderness while not roughing it so much. And, you know, the last day we were there, we had done a lot of days of driving into the park and looking around, walking around, see Yosemite Falls, and all the other waterfall, you know, stuff that's going on right now. I guess the number of waterfalls present in the park will grow from now through July as snow caps melt and rain comes and things like that. So there will be more waterfalls than I saw. But the last day that we were there, because it's kind of like a little mountain town in rural California, central California. And the last day that we were there, we went and hit up a whole bunch of antique shops. And they have some cool, cool stuff up there. So lots of different antique shops. I myself, I'm not a huge antique shopper. My family likes it a lot. But I have kind of like a Buddha collection. I found a brass Buddha bell, and I've never seen one of those before. It was like $5 or $10 or something. I was like, well, I got to scoop that up. And then I found a globe from the 1950s or something like that. So I was able to get that as well. But everybody got their own little treasures. It was a cool way to end our week in Yosemite.
Sounds amazing. Those are fun treasures.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Heading over to look at some news here. Looks like lawmakers have a couple of different proposals in Florida. We'd always talk about the Florida home market because one of the most challenging in the whole entire country. Under one plan, deductibles would not apply if roofs are damaged in named hurricanes, but if it's damaged any other way, then it would allow the insurance company to have a deductible for the roof of up to 2% of overall policy limits. So a $300,000 home would have a $6,000 deductible. That doesn't sound like a very fun option to reduce the cost of homeowners insurance, but maybe it'll work. Maybe it'll be an option for people. Sounds kind of expensive.
It does sound expensive. You know, I think in Florida, they're really digging for options, but it does have to be cost feasible as well.
Yeah, for the consumer, because right now, what was originally built to be a last resort options, which is Citizens, they have grown 75% in the past 2 years. As of January 31st of this year, Citizens has 776,790 policies on the books. And lawmakers are saying that that is growing way, 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 way too fast for something that was meant to be a last resort.
Yeah, absolutely. Leaving Florida with, you know, very few homeowner markets as it is, and I think Citizens is probably one that's accepting more by means of underwriting than many of the others. So it's leaving them in a position to certainly grow.
Yeah. Well, and one of the other things was, because Citizens is growing so fast, one of the other proposals, it'll be interesting to see if these proposals are merged, but one of the other proposals is to make it to where people cannot get insurance through Citizens unless the competing coverage is more than 20% more than what Citizens would charge. So if you have if you're getting a quote through Citizens, then if your other quote is 18% higher, you have to go with that instead of going through Citizens, which I'm not sure how that's supposed to help cost.
I was going to say, that's pretty interesting. You know, how is the coverage comparison on something like that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, especially if this other bill happens and now you've got a 2% deductible. So, I mean, you know, let's punch that in on a, you know, $750,000 home, because I'm not sure that many homes are going for $300,000 anymore. That's a $15,000 roof deductible. That's the whole roof. You're self-insuring the roof at that point.
Yeah.
But, and maybe not, yeah. You know, who knows? Inflation, maybe roofs cost more than that now. I'm not sure. Six trends are continually driving commercial auto rates up. The data was collected since 2011 when commercial auto insurance became unprofitable as an industry trend. Number one, can you guess what number one is, Don?
Inflation.
No, smartphones.
Oh my gosh, I was way off.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So the number one is smartphones, which is distracting driving. Yeah. And 9% of all crash deaths since 2011 have been due to smartphones. So that's really driving up the cost. Number two, legal cannabis. So apparently there's a link there. Number three is worsening crash severity. Number four, there's your inflation, rising repair costs. That's going up a lot. We was talking to a guy while we were traveling through California, an RV repair guy. He said some of the parts that they're up over 100% of what they were a year ago. So, yeah. And then last one, number six, social inflation and litigation. I don't know what happens. Everything changes. I guess this is our time in the industry to address the series of changes that are hitting the generation of current insurance agents and insurance agency owners. You know, maybe consulting with your clients, I guess, on those big things might be a good idea. But, you know, whole series of challenges all over the place all the time, I suppose.
Absolutely. It's crazy how things have evolved. I mean, you mentioned that article was from 2011. So, I mean, that's fairly recent.
It dates back to 2011. So this article actually was published today. But the data collected in the article, yeah, it goes back to 2011.
Dating back to 2011, I apologize.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty recent block of time to see those types of changes in the industry.
Yeah, it's definitely something that's going to have to be addressed, that's for sure. I don't know if we'll have to disable the hand motion in cars, you know, being able to use your cell phone with your hand, or I'm not sure. I don't know. Something probably will have to be done, though, if we want to get this stuff under control. Maybe in like their little smart chip thing that, you know, Progressive and all those other guys have plugging into your car now to monitor your driving. Maybe that can have a cell phone receptor hookup to see if you, I don't know, maybe you get a discount.
You know what's really interesting about that? They've actually moved away from that chip module.
Nobody wanted it?
Well, it's app-based, so you don't even have to plug anything into your phone. It's just the GPS in your phone now. So it's actually moved away from the hands-free.
Oh, so that probably would be
more involved in the phone.
Yeah, that probably would be really easy to see. Is this person texting while they're using GPS? I don't know. Be interesting. So jumping in with Peter Friedman with Agile Cap here in just a minute. He is going to talk to us about how to grow your insurance agency through the merger and acquisition method. Right back after this.
Are you an insurance agent needing access to more carriers? Insurance Professionals offers agents instant access to top national home, auto, commercial, and life carriers. Our free multi-rater allows you to quote all lines of insurance with one data entry process, and quotes are available instantly. Our program provides direct carrier access to agents, so there is no middleman underwriters to wait on. Simply quote your insureds with our free multi-rater, pick the quote you want, and log into the carrier to bind directly on their website. We charge no upfront or monthly access fees. Get started today at becomeaninsurancepro.com. That's becomeaninsurancepro.com.
All right, I'm here with Peter Friedman with Agile Cap. Peter, you're on the other side. You're working with the buyers. And, you know, so today we want to dive into the world of buying an insurance agency. Specifically, I want to speak to someone who is maybe looking to buy their first book of business or their first book of business in this specific climate, because it's a really tough one. That's where you come into play. Let's walk through. Let's say that I own an insurance agency and maybe, you know, maybe I've got a few million dollars in revenue and I'm like, I want to get on this, you know, merger and acquisition run. And I want to start scooping up smaller insurance agencies and grow my book of business that way. Number one, thank you for joining us. I know you guys are busy. I took time out of your day to do this, so we appreciate it. But I want to jump in. What's the very first step that I take as an agency owner looking to expand through M&A?
So step one, and in many ways, it's very similar to the way to think about it, is that you were buying a home, is you got to look at yourself and what are your current financials? As you were buying a home, are your tax returns prepared and filed? What is the current status of, you know, your bank accounts? If you filed your taxes, compiling all this information together so that it's readily available for you. And so step one is yourself. Hey, am I ready? Do I have all my paperwork ready? Have I thought through what I can and can't do? So then we think step two is a little bit more of a strategic. That first step is tactical, which is, what can I acquire? Let's say I'm a couple million dollars in revenue. You're not going to go acquire $10 million in revenue. Hey, that's just too big. It's the small fish acquiring the large fish. You're going to say, what's the size of agency? What can my people internally take in? And how do we do it? And how does that fit with our current book? Are we primarily commercial? Or are we residential lines? Are we mostly home or non-standard auto? Kind of, what is the matrix that we are? And then, are we looking to add to that, or are we looking to fill in holes in the matrix? And so there's a tactical piece. Am I ready for this? And there's a strategic piece, which is, what should I go acquire?
Sure.
Once you have those conversations, then you're kind of ready to say, start looking.
Yeah. So if an agency owner is in that phase, is that somebody that you guys go, yeah, come to us, talk to us, and we'll Absolutely. Help you figure all those questions out?
Yeah, so we are very, very comfortable sharing with you as to how a lender looks at you. And it's really a conversation around what we call the three C's. The first is cash, which is, and it boils down to something called a debt service coverage ratio. You'll hear DSCR as a common acronym. And that's really like, how much can you afford and to pay your all your bills, all your expenses, our bill, the lender's bill, and then how much is left over or buffer. A good way to think about debt service coverage ratio is you can look at it from a business standpoint, or if you're a small business, you want to look at it potentially for what's called global, which is you personally, especially if you're 100% owner, as well as the business, because small businesses blend with their owners naturally as it occurs. And you're looking for debt service coverage ratios, ideally that are what's called 1.25, 1.25 times or greater. And that's a generalization. It very much depends. But when you start thinking about things, cash is the first, and we can help you work through that calculation, debt service coverage ratio, and that'll limit what size you can buy and how you can buy and so on and so forth.
Sure. Now, let's say that I'm a small agency owner and I'm looking to buy my first book of business. And, you know, maybe like you said, maybe I'm in that $2 million revenue range, $2.5 million revenue range. What size of agency am I realistically looking at the potential of buying? And how much cash do I need to accomplish that? I guess, what's the maximum size of agency that I could potentially, and I know these are all hard questions, right? Because like the short answer is it depends, but you know, let's speak kind of to some general terms here. Like just industry-wide, what are you seeing agencies that are in that $2.5 million revenue range? Maybe they got a healthy, you know, EBITDA, and how much cash do I need, and what type of agency size am I looking at buying?
So what our advice would be is not to bet the farm. So really, you don't want to go after too large of an agency, especially if your first acquisition. There is a learning curve here. If you've done three or four of these, you can do something larger. So if you're a $2.5 million revenue agency, you've got a solid operation, you know, you got your manager who's running things, you got your producers and your CSRs, and you kind of got the operation down, you're looking for the next challenge. I sit there and say, you probably don't want to do anything that's larger than you are, and then ideally within 50% of you size-wise. So let's $2.5 million agency revenue. You should be saying, hey, I want $1 million agency. Current market, that's probably a $2 million purchase price is what it's kind of out there. And then the numbers come in, which is, hey, how much cash can I put down? We really recommend in an ideal world, and this is ideal, is you're looking at 60% borrowed, 20% seller note, and 20% cash. That's a perfect world. Mm-hmm. We flex a lot. We flex to 95% borrowed, 5% cash, no seller note. It just kind of depends. So, but you like having those three components in the equation. So $2.5 million agency, you buy $1 million of revenue. That's a lot to digest. It depends on type of policies, carrier, overlap, big questions, agency management system. So these are the types of things we would advise you. But if you come to me, you got a $2.5 million agency, and you're like, I want to buy 10, we would probably say that's a lot to chew. So we would say, if it's your first acquisition, go buy a $500,000 agency. How does that work? You spend $1 million, 2x times, it went really well. Great. 8 months later, everything's digested. Let's go look for $1 million. Let's start that train going. Mm. I think those are the guidelines you should kind of think about when the size of agency you're looking at.
Sure. And you know, the nice thing about maybe scooping up some of those smaller agencies is there's not quite as much competition from your national buyers that are paying these huge multiples over EBITDA, right?
Yeah, so we're seeing national buyers scoop up anything that has $1 million of EBITDA or more. That's kind of, they're going to come in and they're going to pay you varies, let's call it 8 to 12 times.
Right.
And you're probably getting 6 to 8 times in cash up front and a bunch in earnout afterwards or equity or something like that. Sub-$1 million of EBITDA, there's competition out there, but it's not from the national brokers. It's from people like yourselves who are trying to gain scale. And the beauty of this industry is if you have a $2.5 million agency, you probably could take in another $500,000 of revenue with virtually zero costs. Let's call it 20% cost. That's 100,000 costs. You're dropping 400,000 in cash to your bottom line. You spend $1 million. it's not going to cost you that much to do that. So that's the beauty of the model. You go, and it depends, you go buy a $2 million agency, your costs are probably 60%, and still great math, but it just, it's a different sort of acquisition. So there's things you got to think about. So cash is one. Another one is collateral, which is essentially how much is my agency worth relative to how much I'm borrowing, right? It's the same as a house. You know, if the house is worth $1 million, you can't borrow $1.2 million. Banks are not going to let you. For the most part, they lend between 60 and 80%. That's kind of normal. A loan to value is another way to think about collateral. Same thing with an agency. How much debt do you have? How much can you borrow? Things of that nature. And the third one is what is the last bucket called character. So we're on the three C's here. Character is everything from credit score, prior credit history, bankruptcies, how much personal credit you have extended, things of that nature. And it is, how do you, are you an efficient operator? Do you know what you're doing? To be honest, when we go visit you in your office, is your desk a mess? And is there paper everywhere? In today's world, we don't like to see paper. You don't like to see paper. We love to see a dialed in AMS system where we say, hey, tell us about your book. And you're like, oh, here's the report. We love that. And so that falls into that character. Are they a smooth operator? Are they capable of doing these things? So those are the three C's we as a lender look to. We can start with you before you have a target in mind. We can kind of say, hey, this is how you should think about these things. Or if you have a target and I need to close in 2 weeks. And it kind of depends on the situation.
Sure. So tell me about, let's go back to that $500,000 agency that we keep talking about. Because I think ultimately that's probably, for most people, that's going to be about the smartest move they could make.
Absolutely.
Because yeah, I mean, you could absorb that in. Probably your current staff could service the book. Yep. You know, you don't have a lot of overhead. You don't, maybe you don't even have to take the staff of the agency that you're acquiring in the acquisition, probably. Sure. So let's go there. I'm borrowing $400,000 on this $500,000 book of business. I'm putting down a little bit of cash. Maybe there's some, you know, payouts or stock options or something like that for the current owner. What does my payment on that look like? What's the term? I mean, I know payment's going to be obviously dependent upon interest, but yeah, like what kind of terms are available to me? What are industry standard, interest rates, things like that?
So there's something we call the lending landscape, and we have an actual document. You can download it from agilecap.com, and it kind of lays out what the world looks like. Mm-hmm. And it's essentially, we'll go from the lowest cost kind of money right now. The benchmark right now is an SBA loan. SBA loan has lots of pluses, lots of minuses. The rate is between 5 and 6%. It kind of depends what you're borrowing, size, bank you're getting it from, but count on it being, and we're about to enter a rising interest rate market, so that's just going to naturally go higher, but you're looking at 5 to 6% in the SBA market right now, with its pluses and minuses. If you're a much larger agency, very high quality credit, you might be able to get close to that 5%. But I think that world is changing right now, as we all know about interest rates. And term-wise, it's funny. If you're too small of a loan to an agency, most lenders are going to want to be like, hey, just pay it off quickly. Do it in 5 years. But on average, terms out there are a maximum of 10-year amortization is how you want to think about it. That's kind of the max you should expect. But a very small loan relative to a larger agency, most lenders are going to push you and say, hey, just pay it off. Why? You have a lot of cash. Why borrow it? But think about between 5 and 10-year terms, interest rates, 5+. 5 is your top credit. You're borrowing a small amount. You have your personal financial statement, a PFS, is very strong. Like, you have a ton of retirement money, good life insurance, things of that nature. Above 6%, you go to a specialty lender like ourselves. A lot less constraints associated with the loan than an SBA, which is a government guaranteed loan. But you're going to pay between, let's call it 6 and as high as 12%. And that 12% borrower is someone who has very poor credit history. Maybe he's borrowing too much relative to the size of their agency, things of that nature. So let's do quick math, $400,000. Let's say you're straight down the middle, you're a 6% borrower. So your interest cost, year one, is about $24,000, 400,000 times 6%. And I'm doing this off the top of my head. It's not unusual in year one, your payment is going to put half that amount or twice that amount in premiums, your payments are about $5,000 a month is the way to think about it. And so it depends on amortization term, all sorts of things, but that's a good way as a placeholder. So $5,000, let's call it $60,000 a year. Your lender is going to see, after you've paid all your expenses, paid yourself a living wage that you're accustomed to, and that you've been living on. If you've been living on $500,000 a year, your lender is not going to say, well, next year you're going to live on $100,000 or $50,000. If you've been living off $50,000, that's great. You know, it depends where you live in the country and so on and so forth on costs. And they'll say, okay, pay yourself, pay all your expenses, pay everything, pay the borrower, and we want to see you have a little bit extra left over. And that's that debt service coverage ratio, 1.25. So
yeah,
those are roughly how the numbers work.
But on a $500,000 agency, I mean, you're bringing in, you know, a little under $42,000 a month. So, you know, at $5,000 a month, I mean, you've got a lot of room to.
Exactly. And, yeah. And that's why there's massive kind of economies of scale in the insurance agency world, is that $2.5 million agency can buy a $500,000 agency. You could keep one CSR, you could keep the office space and the paper and all the other costs, and it still costs you only $100,000 a year. You have $400,000 a year, you drop to your bottom line, and you're paying $60,000 in interest costs associated with it and payments and stuff. So sure. You're exactly right. That's why it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then, so let's say that I do this. So I go through, I finance about 400,000 of it. My payment's about 5,000 bucks a month. You know, I've got all this cash room now, and maybe I'm smart and I pay down a bunch of the, or should I pay down a bunch of the principal on that existing loan to, like, this acquisition went well, and I'm going to head out and start looking for my next deal. Or am I better off having that extra cash on the books for the next purchase and maintaining the debt that I've acquired through Agile Cap or the SBA or whoever it is?
Yeah. So in this example, you're better off maintaining the debt.
Okay.
Lenders like to see you borrow an appropriate amount of money, consistently pay it off, have no problems. You know, when the annual review comes around and they ask for your updated tax returns and everything's gone well, they love to see that. Paying money off early isn't always a benefit unless you're over levered, right?
Okay.
So yeah. There is a, you know, credit card companies like to see you use the credit card. Banks like to see you use the money. It's the same idea. Credit card companies don't want you to max out your balance in any sense, but they want you to maintain maybe a little balance, or just they make money off you using money. Same with banks and lenders.
Sure. So then, you know, how long until... And we'll dive into agency specifics and what banks are comfortable with and what they're not. But how long until you could potentially acquire your second agency after you acquire your first? Or so should you?
We have, I'll tell you what we've done. We've done up to 3 transactions at once, day one. So that works out. Now, it's always hard due to timing. We have done multiple transactions in a 6-month period. We've done one a year. But we're a very flexible lender. A SBA loan is not going to like to see more than one a year at maximum. They want to see you integrate it. They want to see you get through renewals on all the policies. They want to see you, if you hit bonuses, if there's any new carriers, they want to see new tax returns with the integrated opportunity that you just acquired, all those types of things. Generally with your lender, you want to be upfront as possible. Also, you want to sit there and say, hey, I want to acquire this business, but I got 3 others in sight and I want to get them done in the next X number of months. So it depends on the operator. You know, the operator who is disorganized, has never done an acquisition, maybe is slightly understaffed. You're going to sit there and say, hey, you're probably not ready. Let's do one. And the flip side is highly organized, staffed up correctly, efficient. We say, great, let's do one every 6 months if that's what you want to do. We have done the full spectrum from 3 on day one to one a year over 3 or 4 years, and building an agency from 5 to 600,000 to over 3 million in revenue in really about a 5-year period. And that's what ultimately most of, I would imagine, your listeners are trying to do.
I would imagine too. So let's go into look at, like, the characteristics, right? Mainly auto insurance agency down the road from my agency, let's say, and they don't have a lot of home on the book. Maybe I'm a home and auto guy. But, you know, this agency down the road is mainly auto, maybe even like, you know, SR22 high risk type auto insurance.
Yeah.
Are what lenders willing to lend on the agencies highly dependent upon what's in that book of business?
I wouldn't say highly, but that is a material factor.
It's a component.
It definitely is. And it's, hey, I'm a straight home guy. Home turns over once in 20 years. I've been a residential guy for a long time. I've never had any issues. My loss rates are low. And then I want to go buy an SR22 book. You're like, well, okay, these are totally different animals. This is auto, non-standard. Are you sure you want to do this? And we're going to raise some flags and be like, okay, you have to start small. You have to figure out how this works. You know, it may be in a totally different community. It may be crossing language barriers in that situation. That's pretty normal to have. So we do look at it. But hey, same carriers, both. One does home and auto, and the other one does home and auto, and there's great carrier overlap. We love that because there's, you know, the field service reps are usually the same. Everyone gets to know each other. It's no problems. So we look at it. It's a component. It's not the biggest component, but it's one we definitely talk about internally.
Sure. And I mean, and that obviously makes sense. And, you know, lenders specializing in this industry, I'd expect nothing less because your business is highly dependent upon the customers that you get and what your book is composed of. So it makes sense that lending would be that same way. So tell me when, you know, the agency owner, that they get everything plugged in, they get their financials over to you guys, and they say, I want to find a home and auto book, or I want to find, you know, auto book or whatever the class is. You guys have buyers that are coming to you also that make it to where you have available inventory or not. I would say, how does this work? But your answer 5 years ago would have been totally different than the answer you're about to give me right now.
That's exactly right.
What do you do now? Because that's the biggest thing, right? Is like, I mean, okay, you got your financing lined up. You can do all this stuff. You got cash. Now, where do you find the agency to buy?
Yeah, it's tough. It's the toughest it's ever been by far. And so there are some listing agencies out there who list agencies for sale. They're good resources. The problem is that they're public in nature. If we know someone who's a seller, we will try to matchmake to a very specific buyer that we know is a great fit, and we're looking for solutions. We're not going to publish a list that exists out there. It's a good place to start the look. The problem is everyone sees it. If we have a great match, we'll make it. But it's right now, it's rare to have a great match. And so what we are advising people to do is do a very active search. Essentially, take the time in your neighborhood, loosely your state, things of that nature, and start almost cold calling and going out and looking for someone who's willing to sell. Sell, it's to find someone who's selling is hard right now. Buyers, and this was the reverse of 5 years ago, you know, plus, where it was very much, I mean, 2012, 13, 14, no one was really buying. It was just, the trend was just starting out, and it's hard. If you came to me and said, hey, I want to spend $1 million and I want to buy $500,000 in revenue in the state of Oklahoma, I'd be like, I don't know. Now, there's some more active markets where there's a lot going on, Texas, Florida, California, just by the nature of their size. I'd say, okay, let's expand it geography-wise. Can you drive 2.5 hours between offices? Those types of things. Yeah. So it's hard is really the answer right now.
Absolutely. But that's something you guys can help facilitate the search.
We can facilitate it. But we're not always going to be able to facilitate it.
Well, and I think that's just anybody in the market right now, right? Because, you know, I've looked on some of those agency for sale by owner type sites, I guess is what you call them. And it seems like, you know, probably the ones that are anywhere in the realm of normal go on and off of the listing in a period of probably a few hours. And then
make it to the listing to be
honest. Yeah, they don't even, when we sold our agency, it was 2020. So same climate, little, you know, a couple of years ago, we never listed. Nobody, you know, nobody even knew it was for sale except the people that our advisors approached to tell it was for sale.
Yeah.
And then we sold before we, I think it was four people that they approached, and we got like two or three offers, and you know, then we closed. But you know, that's the hard thing, right? Is like anybody that's listing on those sites, I don't want to say it's a waste of time, because I'm sure that there's like diamond in the rough type stuff going on out there where you could luck out and find something if you're really, really diligent. But like a lot of the stuff that sits on there, I mean, if their agency is, you know, if the listing is a month old.
I think that's a good way to think about it. Generally, it could be it's a quirky book. It could be
they're asking way too much.
It is possible things that end up there, or they acquired it 6 months ago and they're just flipping it. That makes people wary of acquiring it, because the seller doesn't know what's in the book. You have those dynamics, but you're right. If someone is looking to buy, it is a much more, hey, you got to reach out to individual agencies that you think may be good targets for you, and have personal conversations. And it works, right? If you're of a certain size, to be honest, go to the national brokers. They're going to buy it for the best price, and that's it. If you're below that size, or what you're looking to buy is below, you know, then it's a very one-on-one marketing sort of approach to buying an agency right now.
Yeah. What is your, if you had to sum up the sum of your advice for buyers? I know that's hard to. Yeah. What would be the line that you'd leave them with?
I think the summary is, make sure your own house is clean as possible, number one. The second point is the diligence, time, and dollars you put into your target will be worth it X, you know, 10, 100 fold down the line. Don't just buy anything at the end of the day.
Yeah. You know? Don't buy something for the sake of buying something. Exactly. I try and tell my kids that all the time. It does not work. But you know,
that's a good way to think about it. So I'd say, make sure your house is in order, and don't buy something just for the sake of buying. Look, the industry will be around in 5, 10, 15 years. We're in a hot cycle. You know, maybe keep your powder dry. That's it.
Sure. Do you see it cooling off?
Look, I think the big players, it's going to, inflation and rising interest rates will start to mitigate things a little bit. You see some noise in specific markets, the Florida home market, you see some carriers pulling out of, things of that nature that all point to, we probably hit the apex about in the last trailing 12 to 24 months of things. I don't see a cliff. I don't see the world radically changing, but I do see us, we're probably not going much higher than we kind of are now. I think it trending towards cooling off by its very nature of, you know, cost of money, things of that nature.
Sure. Well, and then too, I think that, you know, yeah, you can only pay so much before, like, where they're converting these agencies' cash flow into, like, can't really get much higher either. And then the inventory that they're running out of in those, you know, $1 million to $3 million EBITDA range that they're looking to scoop so quick, that's starting to run low too, right?
That starts to run low. You know, you'll probably see, and this is like a 5 to 10 year horizon time, that some of those kind of roll ups start to fall apart and things of that nature occur. There's still a dominant role for an independent agent out there to produce a great business, and for themselves and for their clients. I don't think the industry as a whole going away, but I think there are definitely some changes going on, and we just, you know, need to work with changes.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, now it's time for that next generation of 500,000, $1 million revenue agency owners to grow those books up and get them.
Those are the really, those are the fun ones to work with, because they're young and hungry and hardworking. And they're the ones who didn't grow up in a period where in reality, there was a lot gifted in economic value over the last 30 or 40 years. And now they got to work hard for it. And I think that's really interesting to see how they're hustling and how they're thinking about technology and how to be the best solution for their customers. So look, we love it when a 35-year-old woman who's been in the around the industry for 10 or 15 years and is really hardworking, and it's like, okay, this is what I want to do, and here's my plan. And we're like, okay, let's go run together. And we're very supportive of that.
Sure, absolutely. What does it take to get the 95% financing level?
So
somebody's thinking that, right? You said it earlier, and I popped into my head a couple of times, and I'm like, what does that deal look like?
So the deal looks like, you know, a larger agency buying a smaller, very digestible piece, a common system. So if they're on the same AMS platform, that's key. If they're both home and auto with similar carriers, things of that nature that essentially de-risk the solution. So we sit there and say, okay, got it. You know, there are times we've done 100% financing, you know, so it's even higher than that, but it's got to be $1 million agency buying a $200,000 book, two towns over. We're going to keep the office open, but we could close it to save costs if things go bad. But it's the same carrier, same reps. Everyone knows everyone. That's great. So that's the type of solution that gets 100% financing and gets closed. And our record really is $3 million in 3 weeks is what we've done. That's kind of the record. We do, you know, so that's fast.
Yeah.
You should expect something between 2 and 4 weeks to take. Most of that time is waiting for the seller to get you documents. Yes. We're waiting and you're waiting.
Sure. Well, perfect. Anything that you feel is pertinent to add? I know we've covered a lot.
No, I appreciate the time. Yeah. Feel free to reach out to us anytime, agilecap.com. You can do peter@agilecap.com, and I'm respond to emails all the time. Get on a call with you, anyone on my team. Happy to, whether you're trying to close something in a handful of weeks or you're thinking about it and how to think about it, any one of us would be happy to chat with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Give them a call. Go to agilecap.com. That's how I got in touch with you folks. We totally appreciate it. And hopefully at some point we'll have you back. We'd love to.
Thanks, Abe. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you.